6:30. It's past 8 o'clock on a Wednesday. A real classic Pink Floyd track there. Jogging the memory. We don't need no education. Well, that was kind of the mantra.
Yeah, that hasn't gone well.
Yeah. But so such is life. Gavin Steinhobel, attorney at law, is in to once again regale us with the splendors of what there is to be enjoyed in matters happening locally and internationally. I thought we might take a look at something that has cropped up. Well, two things. Firstly, I see that you have been involved in acquiring property for your Glendale Riders.
Oh, yeah.
That's interesting.
We're delighted to have finally done it, but several years ago, maybe a decade or more ago, a bunch of riders we used to park at the police station in Glendale, and the guys were coming past, and the late Bob Galway walked out, and Bob was staying on about 3.7 hectares that the Collins Group had given him because he was one of their managers. And they'd given him a usufructo and subdivided this little piece of land off, which is a house, some workshops, and an admin block. And in any event, he invited them in, and he said, well, where are you guys parking? And they said, well, down the road at the police station. He said, why don't you park your vehicles here when you throw your bikes off? You can ride from here. And Bob was just such a lovely bugger. He used to invite us to swim in his pool. Quite often he'd fish some beers out of his fridge and say, well, you know, have a beer, lads. And he was just like one of those guys. And we became very fond of Bob. And what we did do is we eventually, you know, we just paid him gave him a couple of rand each every time we parked there. And so this developed, and almost anybody who rides dirt bikes in Glendale parks there. And about 7 years ago, Bob was murdered on this farm by a disgruntled ex-worker. And in any event, he moved, his wife moved off, and there was a charity that moved in. It wasn't very, very well run, and it sort of deteriorated to the point where the Collins Group decided that, there's no need to keep holding on to this property. It's not a viable property. And we then, as the riders, approached them, and they were great about it, and they sold it to us at a nominal value, and we've gone and renovated it, and we're putting a lot of effort and time into it. And I'm on the tail end probably of my riding career, but it's nice to think that we've created something for generations of people who are going to ride from there. And it is a great sport. I mean, especially I did it with my son, and I think whenever I see guys bring their sons up and they've got their little motorbikes and off they go, then you think, well, it's a great thing, you know. And to me and anybody I ever introduced to riding in Glendale, one of the things that we do experience that I don't think many people do, and that is, you know, we're riding through rural South Africa, and you get to see the entire other sector of society that lives just over the hill here. And a lot of them are living fairly subsistence existences, but always glad to see us. We go into their shebeens and have a beer with them. And, you know, you get a better feeling of what this country really is than you do if you're walking in and out of the lifestyle center every day of your life. And so, and also we've got a province with incredible natural beauty. I mean, the splendor of riding out in Glendale, crossing those little rivers, and there's waterfalls out there, there's bush, thick bush that we ride through. It's just brilliant, you know. And that timelessness of almost like an agrarian society, you know, where people are still herding cattle, and they're cooking on fires, and the smells, and that entire experience of just being out in an agrarian society is, it's good for the soul. I mean, it's the highlight of my week every week, and it's great that we, as a association of riders, have managed to secure this asset and to make it a good platform from which to ride. But also, we do annually, as a thanks to the people in Glendale, we do have a fundraiser which we're going to, which we will continue with, obviously. And they are beneficiaries of the company that we bought the land with into. And so, every Christmas we go and hand out food parcels and blankets and things like that for them. So, and it's highly appreciated. And, You know, so yeah, it's just such a good thing. It was such a positive thing, and for all of us involved, the community, the riders, the families, it's brilliant.
Well, well done. It sounds like a good thing all round, and generally more strength to the Glendale Riders Association.
Yeah, and you know, we've had such good contributions from, you know, local business and so forth. And maybe at some stage I'll do a shout out if I've got a proper list, because it's terrible if you leave people out. But a lot of people, even some businesses that don't, you know, where the owners don't ride motorcycles, have come to the party and said, look, you know what, it's a good initiative, and it's a good facility for, you know, Bolito residents. Mm. And it's a good interface between us and the people that live over the hill, because I think, you know, just it just colours your view of things much better when you understand that this country is made up of a variety of different people in a variety of economic circumstances with a variety of cultures.
Yeah, and so if you're able to in a small way even build those social cohesion bridges, yeah, as the government is always talking about, that's wonderful.
Yeah, well, I've only ever really seen rampant racism in Parliament. I've never seen it on the streets. I've never seen it in my interactions with people of other races. I must be honest with you, I think it's a completely a fiction to say that we live in a racist society 30 years after the end of apartheid. I don't think that's true at all. I think we live in an economically disparate society. And I think that the, as well-meaning as they might have been, the policies that have been brought about to change that situation have simply made it worse. But, as I said last time, I do feel there's winds of change afoot. And I think people are starting to realize that if we're going to follow the same old policies, we're going to have the same old results. And we can't afford that as a country. So I think it's inevitable that, you know, when you get ruled by sort of the revolutionaries, that the ideas that they have will be highly Marxist, socialist, and maybe even not even pragmatic. You know, they're ideologically driven people. And the further we get away from those people, and the more we start getting involved with people who can think about things like the economy and give it a good hard look and say, well, how do we fix this? Because obviously we can't carry on like this. Yeah. Obviously nobody wants to sit here in 50 years' time and go, the difference between rich and poor is still a chasm that's unbreachable. I think that, and I can feel that's all changing now. You know, I was listening to the Biz News, and they had the lady from Institute of Race Relations on, and she's been, so to their credit, they've been saying it for 20 years that BEE is a very bad idea and it'll lead to corruption and it's not helping people who are impoverished. It's only helping a handful of people who are already super wealthy and driving around in supercars and so forth, and it doesn't help people on the ground. And I see they've reached out to the EFF and MK, and they've got a dialogue going, saying, like, you know, this is not a good policy. And then their arguments are quite sound. One is that there's a premium on things that are acquired through the BEE process. So that means that somebody who's BEE compliant can quote 25% to 40% higher on projects, government projects, than somebody who isn't. So you've got that natural built-in premium of between 20% and 40%. So if you think about every rand that gets spent in a poor community, they're only getting 60 cents or 80 cents at best. So they're being shortchanged. Who's being shortchanged? Well, the poorest of the poor. And who's being enriched? Like a small handful of cadres. If you think about it, like there'll be one, you know, there'll be an owner who's BEE, and he's going to get 20% of the project to 40% of the project.
It's interesting.
And then the thousands of people who served by that project are getting so much less. So, you know, that's just the one thing. The second thing is it's quite obviously been a massive vehicle to corruption, and it's corrupted our society, not just at the level of, you know, these contractors, but even at the level of huge corporates, you know, where, you know, where they've window dressed, for argument's sake, with people just to say, well, we are BEE when they're not. So you sort of almost
hide fronting.
Yeah, you're fronting, but you and I, you know, I've got some sympathy with businesses who did that, because ultimately, if you think about it, if it's an existential threat to your business that you suddenly can't do business that you used to do, you're going to have to make a plan, and or you're going to have to close and go and do something else.
Well, it seems like the engineering that hasn't been successful, not particularly successful, has been hugely successful for the beneficiaries. And although very few of those have been able to hang on to their acquired wealth, it's an interesting observation that apparently the new middle class or affluent upper middle class, in terms of savings, there's hardly anything there because they've used whatever largesse has come in terms of
I've also noticed that when it comes to things like bond applications and so on, their credit worthiness is non-existent. Mm. You know, just their financial discipline's been non-existent. But, ultimately, I think anybody who really wants to just sit down and think about this just for a little while and think, well, how could we possibly get rid of income disparities? How can we have a more racially representative economic class? All of that, weirdly enough, gets taken care of automatically when you don't try and engineer your society, but you focus on your economy. And, you know, and people... Anybody would rather have a job than have a grant, you know, because a job has an upward trajectory. It can take you places. A grant will stay the same for the next 50 years. Mm. And so, you know, I just think it's always been the job of government to be an enabler of the economy. And our government has, for the past 30 years, been a vandal of the economy. You know, the economic policies have been erratic and destructive, as you can see with our DIRCO, our foreign relations. You know, it's just been a disaster for the last 3 months. You can't believe that somebody could mismanage something like that so badly. And then you look at those Zuma years, we were in and out of finance ministers. Nobody had a clear idea of what the direction was that we were taking with our economic policies. You know, these are all things that... the ANC government and the government of national unity now should take very, very seriously, because that's what affects people's lives, not whether or not Iranya exists or whether or not, you know, I mean, this land issue is a smoke and mirrors thing as well. You know, I was listening to somebody the other day and they said, well, you know, have a look at Singapore. I mean, the entire size of Singapore is 750 square kilometers, you know, and, you know, they've got a $500 billion GDP. So they create $500 billion in 750 square kilometers. The Ngonyama Trust, by comparison, is 28,000 square kilometers. That's 40 times bigger in surface area. And it has an annual revenue of $71 million. So, you know, that's 7,000 times less than a country that's 40 times smaller. And so, you know, the issue is bad economic ideas. You know, I mean, for example, just having a look, I'm not taking on the trust per se, but I'm just saying that everybody there can't own their property. You know, they can't own the land that they own. And so, you know, these are all economic ideas that we've known for hundreds of years, that, you know, property rights are at the root of economic growth. And so, you know, we need to, and we will, we definitely will. Things have to change because, you know, eventually the pressure of non-service delivery, of continuing and grinding poverty, drives people to dissatisfaction, you know, people are exploring new ideas. The winds of change are afoot, Dave. I can definitely feel it. Well, things that we speak about openly now were not spoken about 20 years ago. And I think that it was because the ANC sort of had this moral upper hand, because they'd ended apartheid and that you couldn't really question anything that they were bringing about. But I think they've completely spent that now with their corruption and incompetence, and nobody really feels any deference anymore, people are quite prepared to say, well, I see what you're doing. It's a very bad idea. We need to change.
And you say it very well, and you say it very loudly and very regularly. So, a good point to pause. If you need an attorney in your corner that knows a thing or two about a thing or two, you want to speak to Gavin Steinhobel from Kloppers Inc. Gavin, always lovely chatting to you.
Yeah, good to see you.
And congratulations on that Glendale.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I'm very pleased for the guys, you know, and for everyone involved.
And long may you ride, as they say in the classics. We'll catch up in a week's time.
Thank you, Dave.